Welcome to Tech Talk.
By
CDT.
Welcome to CDT's Tech Talk, where we dish on tech and internet policy while also explaining what these policies mean to our daily lives. I'm Jamal Magby, and it's time to talk tech. Today, we're here with Sharon Bradford Franklin, chair of the U.S. Privacy and Civil Liberties Oversight Board. The board, which was established several years after the 9/11 attacks, is an independent entity within the executive branch tasked with conducting oversight of counterterrorism programs and activities and their impact on privacy and civil liberties. Prior to chairing the board, Sharon served as the co-director of CDT's Security and Surveillance Project. Sharon, welcome to Tech Talk. So glad you could join us.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. So let's jump right into it. So tell us about the Privacy and Civil Liberties Oversight Board and your role on the board.
Sure. The Privacy and Civil Liberties Oversight Board, or PCLOB, is an independent agency within the executive branch that was created by Congress based on a recommendation of the 9/11 Commission. Our mission is to review federal counterterrorism programs to ensure they have appropriate safeguards for privacy and civil liberties. We are headed by a bipartisan 5-member board. All of the board members are appointed by the president and confirmed by the Senate, and I am the chair, so one of the 5 members. And of course, I'm here today speaking for myself as chair. Two more things I'll just mention are that our functions include both oversight, so oversight of counterterrorism programs, and advice, where we provide advice to intelligence agencies and other government agencies. And our jurisdiction includes not only counterterrorism programs, strictly speaking, but also programs like Section 702 that we're going to be talking about today, where there are multiple purposes that include counterterrorism.
So before we continue, I just want to say congratulations on being appointed by the president. That is no small feat. So congratulations. And if we had a hand clap drop, I would love to add that here.
Thank you.
So as you mentioned, we're going to talk about Section 702. So I'll just go right into it. Administration officials often begin discussion of FISA 702 by highlighting that this surveillance can only target foreigners abroad. If that's the case, why should average Americans worry about FISA 702? And care about reform?
Sure, that's a great question. If I can just step back a moment and just mention, so Section 702 is Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, or FISA, and it is scheduled to expire at the end of this year unless it is reauthorized by Congress. And that program, as you mentioned, authorizes the government to target foreigners who are located outside the United States, and when targeting them, to collect their communications, both the content and metadata, for foreign intelligence purposes. Now, the reason why Americans should care very directly is that Americans' communications can be collected incidentally when they are on the other end of a communication with a foreigner who is targeted under the program. And incidental collection is a known and planned feature of the program. We want the government to know who their targets are talking to inside the United States. However, targets are not just so-called bad guys, but can be any people who are likely to possess or communicate foreign intelligence information within the scope of topics approved by the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. So an American could be completely unwitting and fairly far removed from any wrongdoing when they are talking to a target and having their communications collected through incidental collection. And we don't know the scope of incidental collection, although we know it is large. And this is actually one of the issues that Congress should be considering as it debates reauthorization of the program, is requiring that the intelligence community actually come up with an estimate of the scope of incidental collection to better inform policymakers and the public.
So the debate around FISA 702 seems to have largely been focused on U.S. person queries. Can you tell us what those queries are and why they're important and why there are calls to reform and how they work.
Sure. You're absolutely right that the debate has largely focused on U.S. person queries, and that is a critical reform that is needed to address how they work. So queries in general are a way of searching through information in the 702 databases. They don't allow the government to collect new information, but they're kind of like an internet search where it returns information relevant to your search terms. And when government personnel use a search term that is related to a specific U.S. person, which is a specific U.S. citizen or legal permanent resident, then that's called a U.S. person query. And as we already discussed, targets can only be non-Americans who are located outside the United States. And those people are people who don't have recognized Fourth Amendment rights. And as a result, there is no individualized judicial review at that targeting stage. Instead, we only have programmatic review by the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, including reviewing the targeting procedures, the rules for how targeting is done. But Americans do have Fourth Amendment rights in the privacy of their communications that are well recognized in the law. So if the government were going to target an American to collect their communications, they would need to get approval from a court through individualized judicial review. But in addition to not having any individualized judicial review at the targeting stage, under 702, current rules also don't require any individualized judicial review before permitting government personnel to search through 702 databases seeking information about a specific American. And there's no other kind of independent external review either. So this is concerning and a key reason why we need reform for U.S. person queries. Another thing that's important to flag is, and people who are following this debate will be familiar, FBI in particular has been conducting millions of U.S. person queries over the past several years. In 2022, they had reduced that number substantially due to some reforms that they instituted, but it was still over 200,000 U.S. person queries in that year. And from our review, these queries have not produced nearly the same value as the program overall. And for FBI in particular, outside the category of queries to help identify victims, we really haven't seen substantial or really any contribution to criminal investigations or criminal prosecutions. So this is kind of key. These are some of the key reasons why there have been calls for reform of U.S. person queries. Now, in the board's recommendations, we included what's recommendation 3, which urges that Congress should require the government to seek judicial review from the FISA court for U.S. person query terms. And under the structure of that recommendation, we have urged that Congress could maintain the same query standard that is currently in place and only require that judicial review at the point where there's a hit. So it would enable the government personnel to run their query, and if there's no hit and it enables them to, for example, rule out a lead, they would never have to go to the FISA court. But when there's a hit, before reviewing the content of the communications returned by that query, they would have to get FISA court approval. And then the final piece of the recommendation is including exceptions for exigent circumstances, you know, some emergency exception, and where the government has been able to obtain explicit consent from the individual, such as in the case of trying to identify a victim. And if I may, I just want to flag a few more reasons why this reform is important.
Of course.
So as I was already describing, this practice of conducting these searches through the 702 databases really creates significant risks to privacy. Americans' communications collected through 702 can include very sensitive and private information, such as discussions of political and religious views or personal financial information and mental and physical health information. And individualized judicial review is really a hallmark safeguard of our American legal system. And as I noted already, since there's no individualized judicial review at the targeting stage, it is critically important to protect Americans' privacy rights to have individualized judicial review at the querying stage. And then the final piece I'll mention in terms of why this is so important is that FBI in particular has continued to violate the existing rules for conducting queries. And this has included running improper queries, seeking information about social justice protesters, members of Congress, and participants in an FBI community relations program. And so FBI's persistent pattern of noncompliance over the years dramatically illustrates the need for independent, impartial, and external review.
So Sharon, as you mentioned, the board majority recommended that Congress require court approval for U.S. person queries. And you were part of that majority, but you also filed a separate statement focused on the importance of the probable cause standard. What does that mean? And can you talk a little bit about why you think not just court approval, but this probable cause standard is so important?
Sure. So as I just explained, it's important that Congress should require individualized judicial review and approval for U.S. person query terms. And the board's recommendation on that topic is a policy recommendation based on the need to protect Americans' privacy interests as a policy matter. But when the government runs searches through 702 databases seeking information about specific Americans, this raises constitutional concerns as well. And as I've outlined in my separate statement, under the Fourth Amendment, when the government collects communications under Section 702, that is a Fourth Amendment seizure. At the point when the government seeks to conduct a U.S. person query, that is a separate Fourth Amendment search. And that separate Fourth Amendment search requires, in my view, a probable cause standard. The greatest threat to Americans' constitutionally protected rights stem from FBI searches seeking evidence of a crime, which raise the possibility of criminal investigation and prosecution. And due to the sensitive nature of communications content in other contexts, law enforcement is required to obtain a probable cause warrant before accessing the content of communications. So I have urged that for any queries by the FBI conducted at least in part to find evidence of a crime, the appropriate standard is probable cause. And this would create parity with criminal law in other contexts and ensure that Americans' communications are fully protected by the Fourth Amendment.
Beyond U.S. person queries, could you discuss some other important reforms that the board has recommended, such as narrowing the class of people who can be targeted under FISA 702 and enhancing the oversight the FISA court provides?
Sure. The board has made 19 recommendations in total, 7 of which are for Congress. And yes, this includes a recommendation to narrow the scope of people who can be targeted under Section 702. The specific recommendation, I'm going to just step back, it requires a little bit of background. The specific recommendation relates to something called Executive Order 14086, which was issued by President Biden a year ago to implement the United States' commitments under a negotiation with the EU for a new data privacy framework to enable cross-border data flows. And that's in connection with the Court of Justice of the European Union striking down something called the Privacy Shield back in 2020. So under this agreement with the EU to protect the privacy interests of non-Americans in their data, the United States made a number of commitments. And one of those captured in this Executive Order 14086 states that intelligence agencies may only conduct signals intelligence, which is really surveillance, for 12 specific legitimate objectives. Now, those objectives are set forth in the executive order, but because it's an executive order, there is no necessary jurisdiction for the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court to enforce those. So our recommendation on this topic urges that Congress should codify the 12 legitimate objectives for signals intelligence under this executive order. And that would mean that if in the future the government were to seek to expand the purposes for 702 surveillance to something outside one of those 12 objectives, the FISA court could enforce that and prevent that surveillance. So one important piece from this recommendation is that it is a way to ensure that the government isn't conducting surveillance under 702 to the full scope of the definition of foreign intelligence information. The definition of foreign intelligence information under FISA is quite broad, and the 12 legitimate objectives cabin that and should provide some reassurance to Americans and to foreigners who can be the targets that the surveillance is appropriately focused on these legitimate objectives.
So this report had some recommendations from the board majority, but also a dissent. Was this a full split, or were there some areas where everyone agreed?
So there are substantial areas of agreement among all five board members. First, all board members agree the program has value. All agree that significant reforms are needed. No one has called for the program to lapse, and no one has called for a clean reauthorization of the program. All five board members are concerned about the significant and serious compliance violations by the FBI. All board members agree that the changes made by FBI are welcome, but not sufficient. Another thing that I think is important to note with regard to areas where no one contests the report is the first substantial part of the board's report, well over 130 pages, are the factual narrative describing how the program operates. And we went through a process with the intelligence agencies and the Department of Justice for accuracy and classification review. And through that process, that factual narrative, those factual statements were verified and validated by the intelligence agencies and the Department of Justice, as well as factual statements made throughout the rest of the report. Now, of course, the report and the policy analysis and recommendations includes assessments by the board members, and those are the board members' opinions. But where there are factual statements, those have been verified and validated by the government. The other thing you asked is whether this is unusual, and the answer is absolutely not. Not at all unusual. The PCLOB's authorizing statute explicitly calls for our reports to include what are called minority views. And our statute basically anticipates that there are going to likely be divisions among board members over the complex issues that are covered in our oversight. And historically, our reports have regularly included board member separate statements that explain areas of disagreement with board reports. And this has included the board's seminal reports that came out back in 2014, including the board's earlier report on Section 702 and the board's report on the telephone records program, as well as its more recent 2020 report on the USA Freedom Act.
We've talked a lot about how the board provides policy recommendations, but it also has an important responsibility for sharing new information and helping the public better understand counterterrorism programs that are often far too secret. Could you talk about some information on 702 that's been disclosed to the public as a result of the board's work?
Absolutely, and I'm glad you brought that up. The PCLOB's authorizing statute explicitly directs us to make our reports available to inform the public to the greatest extent possible, consistent with the protection of classified information and applicable law. And so in connection with our reviews that involve classified information, notably our review of 702, we make requests to the intelligence agencies for what's called public interest declassification. And this is pursuant to the executive order that governs classified information. And the Director of National Intelligence is the official who has the authority to balance the harm that would be expected to occur to national security from declassification of information with the public interest in the value of disclosure. And so we made formal requests to the Director of National Intelligence for public interest declassification and were successful in a fair amount of information being declassified. I guess I should say as an aside, of course, we recognize that a fair amount of information about Section 702 will remain classified, and appropriately so. And we certainly respect the decisions by the DNI in this regard. But with regard to some information that was declassified in response to our requests for public interest declassification, the IC publicized this information before our report was published in connection with their ongoing efforts to educate members of Congress in connection with the reauthorization debate. For example, the IC declassified the number and topics of what are called the 702 certifications, which is the topics on which the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court has authorized collection of information. And specifically, they declassified that there are three certifications approved by the FISA court, and these cover foreign governments and related entities, counterterrorism, and combating proliferation. In addition, there's a substantial amount of information that has been declassified through our report. And I'll just give you a couple of examples. One is we provide much more detail on how the vast majority of FBI's US person queries don't actually return hits. For example, in 2022, only 1.58% of US person queries returned a hit. So that means for, I'm not going to do the math here, but for the vast majority of those queries, when they run them, no information is coming back and just turning back to the recommendation where that the board has made on FISA court approval of US person query terms. That means that for well over 98% of those FBI queries, they could run them, find out that there was no hit likely, and then never need to go to the FISA court for approval. Another example I'll give you of information that was declassified with a report is more detail on how Section 702 information has been used or hasn't been used in criminal investigations and prosecutions. As our report describes, there have been only 9 cases in which the government has relied on Section 702 data in a criminal prosecution and provided notice to those criminal defendants. And the government cannot point to any case in which it relied on evidence that was returned based on a US person query.
To close us out, I just want to say that the board's FISA 702 report was a colossal effort. And I'm curious to know, what other projects are on the board's agenda?
Sure. So we have 2 other projects that we have all agreed are high priority projects for us on our agenda, as well as a number of other projects. The 2 other high priority projects are, first, our review of the government's efforts to combat domestic terrorism. And as you're aware, efforts to combat domestic terrorism have been increasing in focus and attention among government agencies for the past few years. And they raise a host of somewhat novel issues concerning, for example, free speech rights and the impact on protected classes. And so we'll be looking at a lot of those issues. The second high priority project that we have identified is our ongoing work with regard to Executive Order 14086 and the data privacy framework that I mentioned earlier in connection with one of the board's recommendations. When President Biden issued that executive order, it invited the PCLOB to play a number of roles under the executive order, including reviewing new policies and procedures issued by the intelligence agencies to provide enhanced safeguards when it conducts signals intelligence, and in reviewing a new redress process that has been created under the executive order. In addition to those 2 additional high priority projects, the board has a number of additional, also important projects on our docket that have been on the docket for a longer period of time. And it is also important that we move forward with those projects and be able to publish documents based on the important work that our staff have been doing, conducting those oversight reviews.
Well, Sharon, I just want to say thank you so much for joining us today here on Tech Talks. It's been a true pleasure, and just to have you back in the CDT office has been fantastic.
Thank you so much.
Of course. And for all our listeners, if you're interested in more Tech Talks or anything that was mentioned throughout this episode, please feel free to visit us at cdt.org or on our socials at SendDemTech. I'm Jamal Magby, and thank you all for talking tech.